Blog Talk Radio.
Empty promises, believing all your lies.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Shattered Innocence with Darlene J. Clark. Darlene J. Clark is from the southern United States. She is an author, advocate, driver, survivor, podcaster, and a YouTube podcaster. She states, abuse is abuse, abuse is not punishment. It's horrific, demeaning, and terrifying. It does not matter the degree of the abuse. I am not saying degrees of abuse does not matter. I am saying do not devalue your abuse. It should not have happened. Do not compare and tell someone else theirs is far worse. Abuse, as I continue to state, is wrong. What happened to you mattered, and it still matters. You mattered. I am the author of Shattered Innocence and Born and Live in Hell. Shattered Innocence can be found at Amazon.com. Born and Live in Hell is no longer in publication. I named this podcast Shattered Innocence because our innocence has been shattered. Please never lose hope on healing. God helped me, and He continues to help me. Thank you, God. Where I will end up starting off, and I will talk about the song for a minute. I had written it based on an ex-boyfriend before. But then the more I get to listening to some of the lyrics and maybe realize we believed a lot of the abuser's lies. They told us lies that they will not do it again. They told us lies that we were worthless, that we were no good, that we were mistakes even to God. But now we know better. I want to read a little something that I have in my book that tells y'all and explains why I felt like I needed to get my story out there. What started the processes on top of being in an abuse group for, I'm ashamed to say that I had personality disorder, multiple personality disorder, because of all the stuff that happened to me. It took a toll on me, and I ended up joining a group. And I did a little writing. It was called Regina's Triumph, which is in my book, but I'm not going to read that at the moment. But they're the ones that told me that their writings helped them explain to their psychiatrist what was going on with them. Can they please have copies of whatever I had written? I gave them my answer is yes, you can. If this helps you to with your doctor, by all means, share it. So years later from that, after my divorce, I ran into some other problems when I just continued to tear up my book. At the time, I was calling it From Tears to Triumph. So here's the little things that told me and taught me that I had to go ahead and do my book no matter what. Strength comes from the past. People continue to tell me to forget the past. It doesn't hurt me as badly as it used to. I am telling my story, one of survival, of courage, of hope. I aspire to reach out to others to whom this has happened to. People should learn not to judge anyone. The worst thing I've heard is, I would have done this if this happened to me. I would have hit him with the broom. I would have hit him with the frying pan. I would have done this. They didn't live it. They don't know what they would have done either in my situation or in anyone else's. The person has enough trouble surviving and coping without hearing someone saying what they would have done if that happened to them. It is degrading, Surviving the horror of abuse is an inspiration in itself. For those who have lived it, they know the hell. Each day was a matter of survival. Yes, some laws are supposed to help the abuse victims, but in my situation, it did it on numerous occasions. Whenever you hear someone's story of abuse, please don't tell them what you would have done. It makes the person feel worse. It's like saying you could have done it better and that we didn't do a good enough job surviving. To the judges, are you God? The Bible warns against judging, and Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2, Jesus said, judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. What measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. We need to pat ourselves on the back for surviving the horrors. So please don't say what you would have done or tell the survivor that he or she needs to stop discussing the abuse unless it was you in that situation. I hope to show my strength by sharing my story. I'm hoping others in similar situations can open up and talk about it. The worst a person can do is not talk about it. It gives the perpetrators more power. Let's get our power back and keep it. I was destined to write this book. I was in an online support group. One day I shared a piece I wrote named Regina's Triumph. It's in a chapter called Poems and Other Writings. The members of the group asked for my permission to copy and print Regina's Triumph. They informed me the writing portrayed how they felt and helped them explain to their psychologist how they felt since they had trouble explaining their feelings. It made me proud to be asked this. My words would help my abused friends explain how they feel internally. I felt honored. So I permitted them to show their doctor, therapist, this literary piece. There were three times they'd given up writing this book. All three times, within 3 days of me wanting to give up writing, abuse happened. The first time I was talking on a popular messenger service of my friend named Cowboy Bill. He informed me about his friend who was a police officer who had given him some horrific news. A 4-year-old child overheard her mother and mother's boyfriend arguing. The little girl went to ask the mother's boyfriend to please stop fighting. She was trying to get his attention by tugging on his shirt. He backhanded her, which sent her young body down a flight of stairs. She didn't survive. The second time was about a year earlier when a friend asked me to speak with her daughter who was being abused severely. I tried to convince her to leave. Close to a year later, Molly contacted me to inform me her daughter had died. She was stabbed over 80 times by her significant other. I had given up on this book a few days before I was notified of the horrific news. I was asked to let her friends at a social network site know the disturbing news. She gave me the newspaper link, so if anyone doubted the horrifying news, the link would prove truthful. The third time I gave up writing this book, a woman went to a local texto in the city where I was. A little while later, the mom told the clerk the car was stolen with a 5-year-old son in the back seat. An APB, All Points Bulletin, was issued. Giovanni Glass was located inside the family's garage. His name is Yante. It was too late to save this precious 5-year-old boy. He was deceased and saved inside the same vehicle his mother had claimed was stolen. He died from blows to his stomach for bringing home a bad report card. The mother's boyfriend was the abuser. The mother was involved as well, and she helped her boyfriend cover up the hideous crime. Now here's my story. I was born in a family that already had a lot of kids. My mother was born in Germany, and my daddy had met her in the military. He met Hilda at a bar. Hilda already had two known children, Gerald and Angelic. Daddy Charles and Hilda had a child together, Gwen, in Germany. They brought Gerald, Hope, and Gwen back from Germany. Well, up north in the United States, Charles Jr. was born. Hilda and Charles moved back to the south, where his family was. for serving at the Arsenal Marlene and I were born. I supposedly kicked Marlene out. I was born about 20 minutes later. I was able to come home early, earlier than Marlene did. I didn't know where we lived, but a great aunt helped take care of me. Later on, Hilda and Charles would abandon us for about a week. Angelic and Gerald were not allowed to cook at the time, yet the bottles needed washing. They needed warming. But back then, they weren't allowed to turn on the stove, so Marlene and I had to drink cold milk. Can you imagine having to take care of four children still in diapers? Marlene and I were infants. Charles Jr. was 1 year old, and Gwen was 2 years old. Gerald and Angelic were 7-plus years older than me. Back then, there were cloth diapers. Angelic and Gerald had used T-shirts or whatever they could find. Aunt Zelda would come over sometimes, and she would clean the house, and she would change us to cook for us. I spoke with another cousin a couple years ago, and he said he would come over and help out sometimes, too. And he says, man, as soon as I got one of y'all changed, I had to change another y'all, and then by that time, y'all might have went again, had to change y'all again. He said it was never ending. One time, Daddy Charles got out of jail, and he was angry. The door was secure. I was around 2 years old. Daddy had a gun and was shooting through the windows. Shards of glass and splintered wood were going everywhere. My older sister pushed me to the floor and laid on top of my small body to protect me. A family member shared the story with me. When Marlene and I were 2 years old, Derek was born. While Hilda was still in the hospital, I had trouble breathing. I do not know what happened to Daddy Charles' vehicle. It's running up and down the side of a major road to get help. A police officer stopped. He tried to give me mouth to mouth, but it didn't work. The officer drove Dad and me to the hospital. The emergency physician administered a tracheotomy. The doctor admitted me to the hospital to try to find the cause. I was there for 2 weeks, but they couldn't find the problem. I had found out later that I was adopted by all the nurses. They sent me home with big stuffed bear. When Derek was 2 years old, Hilda started abandoning the five of us, Gwen, Charles Jr., Marlene, Derek, and I were abandoned in a grocery store. Luckily, Gwen knew my aunt's phone number. She would come pick us up. She kept us with her until Hilda came back to get us about a week later. I suppose Angelic and Gerald were in an orphanage. One time when Hilda came to pick us up, my aunt put up a fight and refused to let Hilda have us back. Hilda and Charles got a divorce and had a custody battle in which my dad won. Dad met a lady named Sue. Sue had two children named Bart and May. Bart was 2 years older than me, and May was 1 year older than me. They married and later had a boy named Paul. I kept claiming that that was my baby. Different stories in here, like falling out of a bunk bed, and I ended up having to go to the hospital. And when we got ready to leave, they were wheeling me back out because I had lost consciousness. I didn't know. I guess I was in shock. I had the head trauma because I landed on the board of the top bunk. The railing that fell down, and I landed on that. Well, I remember the doctor saying, well, she's okay. She'll be okay. I thought, what do you mean I'll be okay? I'm not okay. And when I was being wheeled out, then Dad said, hey, we forgot something. And I did not know that Marlene was already in the hospital, that she had pneumonia. And Marlene's my twin sister. And it was told to me by Marlene that Dad had got her naked and put her body outside in the snow. And so she developed pneumonia, and that's why she was in the hospital, because of her having pneumonia. There were some good times, like being on the Benny Carl show. There were some different times when I wished that I wasn't a twin, because it's like some teachers and other people live to compare us. I'd like to say the prettier twin, the smarter twin, the ugly twin. That was always difficult as well. Even though I was notably called the prettier twin, the smarter twin, the prettier twin, I still didn't like it because I didn't think it was fair to Marlene to be considered to be called ugly, to be called basically dumb, to be called these other names. We had enough of the abuse at home about being hit. But my stepmom told me when I was a teenager that she stopped my temper tantrums when I was 4 years old by holding my head down in a sink full of water. How did I not drown? Since she held my head down in a sink full of water until I lost consciousness, how did I not drown? It had to be God. They tried many times. There's another time there was a neighbor, she was putting the permanent in my hair. Back then it was permanent, like dippity-doo. And it's a blue gel. I don't know if a lot of y'all remember that. Kind of permanent. And if anybody wants to call in, they can call in 563-999-3517. And when she was curling my hair, my stepmom was sitting on the couch watching her do it, and Sandra was smoking a cigarette. Well, she dropped the cigarette, and she tried to look for it at first, and she said, well, I'll find it in a little while. So she waited, and, oh, man, I was wearing these blue polyester pants, and I felt it burning me, and I was about to say something, and my stepmom looked at me, and she put a finger to her mouth like, you better not say anything. You better be quiet. So I mustered up the courage, and I pushed my thighs together, and I put out the cigarette. Well, Sandra got through rolling my hair, and then she looked for the cigarette. She couldn't find it anywhere, so then I tried to fight her when she tried to spread my legs. When she spread my legs, she found the burn marks where the polyester burnt to my upper thigh. And she goes, my child, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I should have looked for it right away. I should have known. Why didn't you say anything? And I looked back over there at my stepmom, and she put a finger to her mouth again. And so I didn't say anything still. And she goes, yeah, and my stepmom said, yeah, why didn't you say anything? But she was trying to make it seem like it was okay for me to talk, yet behind the Sandra's back, she had a finger to her mouth like, you better be quiet. I know what that means. I better be quiet, and I better not speak, or I have even more trouble. I remember the first time that we actually went to a church when I was about 9 years old. I always thought I was a mistake to even God. But it was kind of weird. I had known that God was around. It's kind of hard to explain. But we went to church. We got out of the van. Right when my left foot hit the rocks, back then it was not paved in the churches. A lot of the churches' parking lots had maybe big rocks or dirt or different things like that. They were not generally paid back then in the early 70s. I put my foot down, and the first thought automatically was, I am home. I just felt like I belonged at that church. I had never in my life had that sensation or that thought come to my mind except for during that time. And four people, where we were actually a gospel group a little bit after this, where my stepmom played the piano and eight of us kids were singing. One of my brothers weren't born yet. And to note that these people still had all the sadistic nature of the child for beating children. It was horrible. Life at home later on, we moved so much. It seemed like we moved every 2 to 3 years. And sometimes you wonder why you move around so much. Life at home was like Daddy Charles would summon all of us into a room. He made me step forward. He hit me in my head, knocking my 10-year-old body to the floor. He told my siblings, Gerald, who was about 17 years old and a kicker of the high school football team, Bart, who was 12, Gwen, who was 12, Charles Jr., who was 11, May, she was 11, and Marlene, age 10, to kick me all over my body. I curled up my body into a fetal position. As they were kicking me, Dad instructed them to kick me as hard as they could. They circled me, kicking me all at the same time. When they were kicking me, they had to call me fat, stupid, ugly, and retarded. Darlene, you're fat, they yelled. Kick, 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 Dad ordered. Kick harder. Kick as hard as you can. The siblings said, Darlene, you're so stupid, retarded. Kick, kick, kick. I can't remember when it stopped or whenever I got off the floor. I sometimes woke up in bed with my aunt wiping me off with a wet cloth. She told everyone I was coming to. My stepmom came in. She was so irked at me because while I was unconscious, I had wet the bed. I'm not sure how long I was out of it, but they refused to get me any medical attention. She would tie the wet bed sheet around my neck, making me wear it all day long. Meal times were pretty bad, which I'm not going to go into that. Steve Normandy, he was a cousin. He was a heavyset man. His body structure was one like Santa Claus. He had a lazy eye. He was a grown man. When I was about 10 years old, I wondered why I feared him. To my dismay, I found out. Steve still lived with his parents, my great-uncle and great-aunt. There was neither an indoor bathroom nor running water. I used to love wandering outside looking for fossils, but they seemed to surround the small shack. There was a lot of junk that stayed outside and which they tried to sell. I was about 19 years old, as I said. I was wandering around. Steve approached me. He grabbed me and started the game by swinging me in between his legs and back up. At first, it was fun. It made it feel weird when he started sliding me on his body. First, his belly touched me. I said, this is not fun anymore. Please stop. He kept on swinging me as he glided my body down his private area. Please let me go. I knew Dad, my stepmom, Sue, my aunt and uncle and siblings were around somewhere. He seized up my arm as he dragged me into the back door of the small shack. His body language told me I had better be quiet and do as he wanted or else. He pulled me into the bedroom. I was scared to yell. Everything was happening too fast. He pushed me onto the bed as he gripped my right arm. Steve fumbled with his buckle feverishly as he pulled his pants down. Dad started calling my name. Steve was trying to pull my panties down as he exposed himself. It scared me. Do I yell? What should I do? Finally, after Dad yelled, you better come now, my cousin reluctantly let go of me. I was shaking nervously as I bolted out the bedroom door. I rushed, afraid Dad and Sue were going to discipline me since I did not come right away. I pushed the front door as the door springs made a screeching noise. I was shaking so badly. I took a deep breath as I climbed into the rear of the van. Then we left. I think my dad was about to ask me questions, but Sue told him I was nervous and to let me calm down. She matter-of-factly whispered, you can tell Steve tried to do something to Darlene. Then we had the half-brother that had died. Daddy Charles and Mama Sue were going to have another child. I was in school when my Aunt Zelda and Aunt Lottie came to the school. She said, something is wrong with Sue, but I can't talk about it until we get home. I asked, is Sue dead? Aunt Zelda replied somberly, she's okay. Let's not talk about it yet. My siblings were whispering, it must be the baby. He must not be doing well. He must be dead. Aunt Zelda heard all this, which caused her to have trouble driving. I suppose we went to Aunt Zelda's house, but I'm not sure where we were at. And Zelda broke the news. The baby brother died within a few hours, and then he died. The next thing I remember, a huge number of my aunts and uncles circled me. They began praying for me because I was not crying. Matter-of-factly, I expressed no emotions. When I began to cry, my aunts and uncles were shouting, "Praise God, thank you, Jesus." The reason I cried was I was scared of them circling me. This reminded me of when my siblings would circle me and then kick me all over. Of a dad's funeral, everyone was getting ready to leave. She stopped me and when she said, "You cannot go. Women are not supposed to go to funerals." I was flabbergasted. I wanted to say my goodbyes as well as my hellos. I hated the chance of never saying goodbye. I love my little brother. Later, when I saw pictures of the graveside, it's mostly full of the prettiest blue flowers that people sent for their condolences. I was sorry I could not be there for him. My dad had a version of hide-and-go-seek he would play with his girls, but it seemed like it was mostly about me. This will be hard to read and understand. I am reading it, so I don't leave anything out, y'all. It was difficult living in it, but validates had God watching out for me. Although the cruelty had stopped, my life was spared. When I was 10 years old, my dad came into the girls' bedroom. We had shared a bedroom as well as the boys. Daddy Charles walked in with a 12-gauge shotgun welded at his side. But, "Oh, no, here we go again." Dad replied, "Who's ready for hide-and-go-seek? If I see any of you, I will then shoot at you." I thought, one day, someone is going to get killed. I believe Dad recovered so well by claiming it was an accident. I saw a squirrel or another animal, but Darlene got in the way. That sort of excuse. We all ran and hid. I was not sure where everyone else hid. I often wondered where they hid because they hid so well. I ran and hid in the garden behind a hard dirt mound. Dad was chasing Sue around the house while shooting into the sky. Sue was laughing gleefully as he was chasing her and shooting upwards with his 12-gauge. I briefly felt safe. It grew deathly quiet. I wondered where Dad was. I wondered if he was close to me. I prayed he got his mind on something else so this crazy, deadly game would be over. I looked up from behind a hard dirt pile. I did not see Dad. I drew in a deep breath as I laid my head down onto the ground. My heart was racing wildly. I was so thankful he was not around. I was thankful he did not spot me. I knew he always found me first. A few moments had passed in which it felt like an eternity. I decided to look up again. "Oh, no, Lord, please protect me. Dad saw me." He turned towards me and aimed a shotgun in my direction. I was praying hard. I knew I was dead. The next thing I knew, dirt went all over my body. I was shaking fearfully. After the dust settled, I noticed a rock that was right in front of my face. The dirt had it covered. The rock saved my life. I knew it was God who protected me. "Oh, no. He's more low than more coming in my direction." It felt like everything was in slow motion. Dad was still approaching me while reloading his 12-gauge shotgun. I knew I was dead. Something told me not to run. I was looking him right in the face while I was approaching him. So I stood up and did as his inner voice was instructing me to do. I could not feel my legs or my feet under me. I felt as if I were floating. It felt like something was around me, protecting me. I kept thinking, "Do not turn around and run. Daddy wants what he wants you to do so he can shoot you in the back." There was nothing to run and hide behind anyway, so I continued walking to him. Or staring into his eyes, I felt no matter what, I was dead. I felt I would be shot regardless. I walked on up to him as he said, he cursed, "I wanted you to run so I could shoot you in the back." Dad turned his back towards me and said, "I'm going to hunt one of your siblings. I need to kill something today." I was scared and shaking all over. Dad turned his back towards me. A few seconds later, he tackled me. He forced me to have sex with him. At least the other kids were safe momentarily. The craziness ended briefly thereafter. So if anybody wants to call in for encouraging words, want to ask questions, the number is 563-999-3517. To get past that part, that also did a thing called, I'm titled the lineup. We never knew what we did so wrong that wanted all of the supposed disciplines. Dad yelled out for us children to come to him. We had to stand in a straight line like military people do. Stand straight, shoulders up, tuck in tummy, stare straight ahead. More George had time. He questioned us on who stole some of his money. No one stood forward and admitted to being a thief. Dad would start at the top of the road, spanking each person. He asserted, I will continue whipping and beating you until someone steps forward and confesses. Dad either used a belt, a limb, and or his whip. Someone would finally confess, but they would be beaten even further. Days later, Dad later remembered where he spent the money. He apologized to us, but that never stopped him from doing this repeatedly. Okay, I'll get past that whenever I became a Christian. And then there was a tornado that struck that year. I really loved my fifth grade teacher. I call her Mrs. Weaver. She was an inspiration to me. She was one of the positive role models in my life. The way she viewed life was that her glass was always half full. She had a unique way of teaching. It never was boring. This is coming from someone who loved English. Sometimes she tested our reading skills. I was scared when it was my time. Mrs. Weaver had a chair she moved to sit in front of the person as he or she read. I was surprised when she said, Darlene is the best reader in the class. Darlene pauses after the commas and the periods and at the end of the sentences. She also uses the proper pronunciation. I hung my head with embarrassment, but also with pride. Mrs. Weaver's teaching style was different from any teacher I ever had. She had a board game for every story we read. It was interesting to see what she would come up with the next time. Mrs. Weaver was great at giving compliments to all her students. In my opinion, her qualities made her a positive role model. So, Mrs. Collier was my fifth grade science teacher. I did not know science to be interesting. Learning how prisms and how the colors appear on a rainbow was fascinating. Understanding the names of tools in the laboratory, such as a flask and vials, and how they are used was fun. But she was different than Mrs. Weaver. For some reason, one classmate was always late. She did not let him have an explanation or a letter from the parents. She just paddled him. Every day she paddled him. I felt so bad for the student. I knew that some of his family owned a convenience store, so imagine he had to wait on a ride for someone. Although he was late, he may have had a good reason. It may not have been his fault. It was horrible. She would continually paddle him. One day, Mrs. Collier came into the room stating, whoever doesn't have their homework will get a paddling. Marlene tapped me on the shoulder as she whispered, Darlene, I don't have my homework. Did you do your homework? I said, well, you know I always do my homework. I turned back around, and my homework was gone. The teacher asked, who doesn't have their homework? I sheepishly raised my hand. Mrs. Collier asked, why don't you have it? I replied, I think Marlene took my homework. She asked me if I had mine because she didn't do hers. Mrs. Collier replied, well, you should have your hands on it the whole time. Stand up so I can paddle you. Boy, I was mad at Marlene for stealing my homework. I did not feel it's right for me to get in trouble while Marlene was a guilty one. I felt so mistreated. I no longer liked science. Prisms, colors, tools, and laboratories no longer interested me. Now, Mr. Chevy, a.k.a. Coach Chevy, was also my teacher, school teacher. Mr. Chevy was my fifth grade study hall teacher and coach until we got a female coach for the girls. He was my Sunday school teacher at church too. I had always enjoyed going to church to learn and understand God's commandments and the Bible stories. I usually loved raising my hand. One day in study hall, Mr. Chevy said, "I will not be here tomorrow. There will be a substitute teacher. He'll be taking names in case any of you do something wrong." The next day, the substitute teacher sat nervously as she begged some of the students to stop misbehaving. They just laughed at her. I hung my head in shame. The next day, Coach Chevy returned. He replied, "I heard most of you were bad. Let's go to the gymnasium." We all lined up as we followed Coach Chevy to our discipline. There was a stage where people could perform or get awards. Usually people go to the stage to receive their diplomas. We had to go on stage for paddling. If the coach felt like you were not misbehaving, he gave you one paddle with a pat. If he felt that you possibly were bad, he gave you two spanks with a paddle. If he knew you were bad, he paddled you three times. I felt flustered again. Although I only got one spank, I did not understand why he spanked us all. I was a good girl, but I still got a spanking. I loved attending school until the two paddlings. Marlene received three spanks. I felt good that Marlene was disciplined because she misbehaved. Sunday school came. As Coach Chevy asked us questions about our Sunday school lesson, he was shocked because I wasn't talking with him. His eyes were sorrowful, but I was too afraid to talk to him. My safety nets were broken. The school was once my safety net, and he used to be my safety net. We always knew what kind of car Dad was going to have with us by which room we were in. He wanted everyone in the girls' bedroom. The military lineup displayed was to be enforced. In the spare bedroom, where there was no any beds or any furniture, all of us had to sit on the floor against the walls. This meant Dad was going to be threatening. We're all sitting as Dad ranted and raved. He met this discussion with five of us, Gwen, Charles Jr., Marlene, Derek, and I. Dad exclaimed, "You're all going to visit your mom this summer. Y'all better not tell about the abuses or the next time you will not be lucky to live." I began shaking. I did not want to go to mom's. Even though this was bad, I did not want to go to mom's. For some reason, I was scared of her. Okay, for some reason, I didn't like her. Well, she ended up winning the case, and I'll skip over a part of that because some of it I did not want to go over. But when they did win the case and we got back to the house, Daddy LC told me to get out of the car. He wouldn't let me go celebrate. He would not let me eat. But he took the other four and Mom with him to go eat and celebrate. But he told me I need to go beg for food. He would not feed me. Okay, so then we're going on. One time, me and my brother skipped school, Derek. He would not go to school, and so we were told that we're not to ever leave him home alone. So when he refused to get on the bus, what was I to do? But later on, I was disciplined because I skipped school, but I couldn't get him. But we went fishing, and I ended up catching a snake, and I threw the pole back into the water. It was a makeshift pole, used to stick and a rope and everything. I was so fed up with all the things that were going on and not feeling safe. My mom said that I had to get a job, and first, I got a job planting tobacco. I was 11 years old. I ended up with pneumonia, and so I didn't get to work for a week. Marlene had a job planting tobacco, too, but she didn't tell our boss that I was homesick with pneumonia, that I couldn't make it to work. So when I went back a week later, he told me I had been fired for not showing up to work. I told him I didn't have a phone to call him to let him know I was sick. And Marlene quit her job, and I said, "Please let me continue to work." And he said, "No." So when I spoke to Mom back, she ended up telling me I better find a job, that I should go prostitute myself out. I need to sell my body, that she taught me how to do things. Seducing men, that she taught me how to do all this. And I was like, what? I was flabbergasted. And then I knew why I didn't like Mom. It all came clear. and she would not feed me at night. I would have to sneak in the house when they were still at work. I made myself a mayonnaise, ketchup, salt and pepper sandwich, so I lived on that. Didn't eat the school lunches because any time I even opened the lunchroom door, the smell of any other foods made me sick because I was basically being starved, and it was because the smell of food was making me sick. So she didn't cook me nothing. So here's a dangerous game that I played. I was tired of the abuse. I was tired of going hungry. I was tired of having to take care of myself at the young age of 11. It started innocently. It turned into a deadly game of risk, but I did not care. I thought if I died from it, that it was just my time. I doubted anyone would miss me. No one except people at school had seen me for days. I felt so alone. Oh, yeah, and I also slept in the back seat of the car, so whenever they went to bed, my stepdad and my mom, I waited and I got in the back seat of the car and slept. And we lived in Florida, so it had to be pretty hot sleeping in the back seat of the car with the windows up. My siblings were always somewhere else at some friend's house, but my parents never did care where they were at. They didn't care. They didn't have to put up with them. I had been so used to not eating that I could not eat at school. Whenever I opened the door to the cafeteria, the smell of the food was nauseating since I was not used to eating anything except mayonnaise, ketchup, salt, and pepper sandwiches. That was all I usually had daily, and I was not going to beg for food. I was tired of being a twin. I was tired of people comparing my twin and me. I was me. I was an individual. I wanted to be myself. I grew tired of people saying I was a smarter and prettier twin. It might be a compliment to some, but I just wanted to be me. I wondered if Marlene and I had ever felt that way also, but years later found out the answers. When somebody came up to me and said, when's your birthday? Then she came out of nowhere and said, don't forget it's my birthday too. I said, I know, everybody knows that we're twins. So she ended up, people just walked away from me and stopped talking to me basically. So anyway, we live right beside the railroad tracks. The train would usually be unloaded quickly. I had to walk to school. When I was at the other school, the bus would pick us up. My siblings had friends who took them to school, but no one would offer to take me. I had to walk to school even in the storms, the thunder and the lightning. One time I had asked Gwen if I could ride with her and her friends. When I asked, she and her friends laughed. The driver told me they would be glad to take me. But Gwen locked the door and instructed her friend to drive. I knew I would have taken them. I did not understand all this daily cruelty. My entire life was mostly cruel. One day, a train was at a standstill on the trains blocking my way to school. I needed to get there. I did not want to be late. I decided to crawl under the train, but try not to get my clothes dirty. I was nervously thinking about different things, such as, what if the train starts moving? Would I have time to finish getting to the other side without getting hurt? Will anyone tattle on me? Phew, I made it. I went out of school that day. Later, I was playing hopscotch on the sand near the train tracks. I drew out the hopscotch board. Another train came and stopped. I started watching and paying attention to how the train moves when it starts. I kept my eyes on the wheels of the train tracks. Soon, I would notice the rhythm of the trains. Another train stopped. I decided to see if it's okay if I went under the train again. I did it. It felt exhilarating. I noticed it was still at a stop. I heard it start up. I wondered how many times I could get from one side before it would get too fast. I kept playing that dangerous game numerous times. I stopped playing until I tripped and slid. Frightfully, my foot hung up in between the track and the wood at the railroad crossing. Frantically, I tried removing my foot before the train ran over it. Luckily, I got it out in time. She was still in between the rail and the wood. I quickly retrieved my shoe. I fled away from the train. I knew how lucky I was to escape injury when I played this foolish game. I found out years later, a neighbor told Mom Hilda about me repeatedly going back and forth under the trains, even when they began to move. Hilda informed her that it was okay. She was tired of me anyway. I laughed about it. I never wanted to live with her anyway. At the time, I did not understand why I was so apprehensive towards her. It did not take long for me to understand my reasoning. I have more pride in myself than to succumb to Hilda's wishes. When push came to shove, I cared. I stopped it. I knew I had to like me for me. I knew when I grew up, I knew how I would love to treat my kids. I would daydream about having kids, taking care of them and their needs. At 3 and 4 years old, I would hold them, kiss their cuts, kiss their boo-boos, and comfort them when they had a nightmare. Finally, yet most importantly, I would listen to them. By doing this, my children would know they mattered and their needs would be met. That said, anybody can call in at 563-999-3517. My sister Gwen had a boyfriend. I'll call his name Travis. My sister Angelic came to visit with her husband. It was always a treat when she came to visit. I always loved being around her. When my sister, there was an empty house a couple doors down, and her boyfriend decided that he would go ahead and let me go look into the windows because I was curious as how inside the house looked, whether or not it looked like our house or different. So he went on there and he lifted me up and everything, but to my dismay, he forced my pants down and started licking me. My sister rounded the corner and she saw all this and she goes, I'm going to go tell. I was so petrified. I felt like it was partly my fault, but even though I was pushing him away, I always knew that I was the one that's going to get in trouble. But I was not in trouble. She didn't go tell. But I was seeing my stepdad going from the outside of the house to a little shed in the back that had the washer and dryer, and I was so scared that he was going to look over there and they come over there and kill me. To kill him, since he was still on probation for murder himself. To move back with Dad, Daddy L.C. drove Marlene, Charles Jr., and me to meet Dad in between where we lived with Mom Hilda and where Dad and Mom C. lived. Marlene wanted to come with me to keep the twins together. It was a pleasant surprise. Their behavior had improved immensely. They had moved from where we had lived last. Dad and C still had the same job. Things seemed strange at the new place we were living in. We lived beside an old shack. We did not have as many animals as we did before the move to Mom Hilda's and Daddy L.C.'s place. We had chickens, ducks, dogs, and some stray cats. I could not believe it. Dad was not shooting these animals. He fixed peace. He did not make me bark at my food anymore. We sat down at the table like a normal family. A lot changed for the better. We had our own drinks instead of having to pass them down the line. There was laughter and smiles. It was very nice. We had a lot to do because Gerald was getting married in a few days. Gerald's wedding was outside. It was beautiful. The bridal arch was adorned with beautiful white flowers. Started to sprinkle, but the rain never came down heavily, so the wedding still occurred outside. And then Daddy ended up, it was a cold November night in the same year. This is my last night with my dad before he ended up going on a trip and dying. It was a cold November night the same year we came back to Dad, Charles's, and Sue's house. We had been back since the beginning of June. I was not feeling well. I had bronchial pneumonia again. Dad told Sue to go take the other kids to church. He was going to stay home and take care of me. We lit a fire in the fireplace. It was very hot in the house. He covered me with blankets trying to knock my fever out. He made me some peanut brittle. He came back in the living room offering me some of his freshly cooked candy. He said, I have sent Sue to church because I had something very important to tell you. I am sorry for the abuse I had done to you, but Sue made me do it. My dad was a cruel person. He was an adult, and he had a choice. He did it on his own. It hurt me when he blamed others, but I thought it was a big step for him to admit it was wrong. He quit. I have a certain job at work to do. I will be gone for only a few days. I will be back to get you. He left at the end of November. A few days later, around midnight, the phone rang. Sue came and woke us up, stating, get up. Your dad's dead. We all got up and went to the kitchen. I was watching Sue. I already knew Dad was dead. I was dreaming it. Sue started cursing and hitting a wall. She had a back turn, but she did not know that I saw part of her facial expressions. She was smiling. She let out a big laugh. She said, "We don't have to go to church anymore. We can do as we please. I can be mean to you again. I won't have to put up with the nonsense of God in the church." I was very confused. I did not let anyone know about this. I held it in. When people came over, she put up a big front. Dad's dad embarrassed me tremendously. He was smacking the women from church on their backside when they walked by him. I felt sick to my stomach. Aunt Lottie and Aunt Zelda took Marlene and me back home with them. We spent the night at Aunt Lottie's house. I sat in shock and disbelief. I thought it'd be different. I thought it was weird that 2 weeks before Dad died due to the accident at work, Sue and he picked out caskets, bought the burial place, and even took out a life insurance policy on him. I was lying in bed as I replayed all of this information in my mind. It felt too much. I always wondered what the big secret was that he wanted to tell me. Aunt Lottie came into the bedroom. She asked, "Would you both want something to drink?" I said, "Please." Elise said, "Yes." And the goat said, "Please." When she realized I said it, I made it a point to say, "Please. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir." It was easy to do. Respect was a part of me. So we ended up still talking, and then I wanted to end up reading the Bible. She knew what I wanted to do. And it wasn't too long after that when Sue received insurance money from Dad's accidental death and purchased a home with 17-plus acreage. The house was roomy in spaces and sitting on land. Soon after moving, I heard a conversation Sue had with Marlene. "Marlene, you are not loved or wanted. You need to move back with your mom, Hilda." Charles Jr. was convinced to join the military. When he got out of the Army, he moved back home with Mom Hilda. I was the only one left, a dad and Hilda's children living with Sue, Bart, Maid, and Paul. And I was the only children living at home. Bart, Maid, Paul, and I were the only children. Okay. Paul was now in the sixth grade. Bart ended up quitting school, as did Maid. Paul played baseball, and I would usually watch over him. One evening, Paul came into the bedroom frightened. He was white as a sheet. He said, "I'm scared. I just saw Mom and Bart having sex." I thought, oh, no. But it wasn't surprising to me. I had to comfort Paul now. I asked him, "How did you know they were having sex?" I knew both sixth graders mistook kissing for sex. He replied, "They were both naked." I replied, "Okay." He further stated, "I'm afraid she might try to have sex with me when I grow older." She was not as mean to me as she was before, but her violence began again. May and I had a chore list she wrote out for us daily. May did not go to school, so she had the entire day to do her portion. To my dismay, she did none. I would get off the bus approximately 30 minutes before she came home from work. There was not much time to do chores. All six beds were unmade. Both of the bathrooms were filthy. Dusting and vacuuming needed to be done. The dishes needed to be washed and put up. The floors needed to be swept and mopped. She came home in rage. May always got away with not cleaning by telling Sue that she instructed me to do her chores as well as mine. I got my butt bruised severely. I thought it was an injustice for Sue to reprimand me for not doing May's work. It was tough enough to get my chores completed before Sue got home. All the chores were now my responsibility. It was impossible to have all the clothes washed, dried, and put up within 30 minutes. Much less the entire house cleaned. Later on, May had a son. It grew harder on me because now I had to take care of her child when I got home. I did not have time to do my homework. I started failing school because of being unable to study. She forbade me to go to church. Religion was very important to me. I would sneak out of the house to attend church services, but I knew there would be repercussions. I did not care. I thought about how other Christians were tortured because of their religious beliefs. It soon took a toll on me. I stopped going because the beatings wore my 15-year-old body down. Later, she allowed my half-brother to go to church. Then she made me go with him, even though it was the kind of church I did not agree with. It was still church. I was glad I was able to get. At times, I would be washing dishes. All of a sudden, I felt a sharp pain in my buttocks. Sue had kicked me as she bellowed, that moon chip off your shoulder. When I smiled, Sue would kick me and yell, get that grin off your face. Things escalated. I would be sitting on the couch near Sue, and I had to go to the bathroom. Therefore, I stood up and headed to the bathroom. Sue would have sat back down. You didn't ask me if you could get up. I obeyed her and sat back down. I then asked, may I please be excused to go to the bathroom? She said, yes. I stood again and headed towards the bathroom. She instructed me to sit back down. She replied, you forgot to ask, which foot do I want you to start walking on? I felt dumbfounded as I sat back down. I asked, which foot do you want me to start walking on as I walked to the bathroom? She told me which foot and then permitted me to go to the bathroom. I said, thank you. I smiled at her to think I was okay with it. I knew I'd better not have an upset expression as she would order me to my room, make me undress, bend over the bed as she belted me all over my body. She even used a belt buckle. She did not care. Every Sunday, we started going out of a steak restaurant. When we got home, two Sundays in a row, had to go to my room and strip so she could give me punishment. She was cursing as she belted me. Exclaimed. People came up to me and told me she couldn't take anyone as ugly as you are in the public place. Your looks made the people lose their appetite. Sue asked me weekly to go eat with them, but I started saying I was not hungry. I stayed home, although I was famished. Christmas mornings were different from when Bart Dad was alive. We got presents. They and Bart got new stereos, new clothing, records, and everything they asked for. My gifts were May's gifts she received last year, and Lisa had gifts. I did not have to trash them. I enjoyed the wrapping presents I was able to keep. Then Steve Normandy, he returned again, and I was 14 years old this time. I was in the backyard hanging clothes on the line. I looked out the corner of my eyes as I noticed Steve standing there. He ogled at me as I hung clothes. It was an eerie feeling. I did not tell him I was home alone. Steve pranced to me as he acted playfully. I knew not to act playfully with him ever again. I hung the last cow on the line as he proclaimed, let's finish what we started. Let's finish what? He grabbed my arm. This time, I was stronger. I jerked away as I hurriedly ran into the house. I made sure all the doors were locked. He knocked, and I yelled, leave me alone. I do not want you bothering me. He came a few other times and tried, but it didn't work out to his liking. He finally stopped coming over. Then Uncle Charles, another one, had grabbed me when he grabbed me and twisted me around and started pinching my top part. And another guy, Sue's best friend's son, Arnold, stayed with us for close to a month. He brought his government pincher dog named Hulk with him. Arnold told Hulk to attack and pointed at Paul. Paul had climbed on the doorknob to avoid him. Arnold grabbed him right before he snapped more at Paul. He was showing me that I better do as he tells me or else. Jeff, I came back from a date with Jeff. We kissed goodbye. I walked inside, seeing Arnold sitting on the couch. I was a few steps in, and he ordered me to go to the room and change into shorts. I said, I'm going to bed. He ordered, do as I told you. Your mom, Sue, is in on it. I didn't know for sure, and I knew no one cared. But I felt I had to do as I was told before he would order his dog to attack me. We went outside to below Sue's bedroom window. As he was waking me, I saw Sue smiling as she watched from her bedroom window. I was thinking, oh, my God, please help me. Sue was in on the rape. After Arnold was through with his heinous act, he went out to the grapevines and pulled a leaf off to clean himself with it. I was not allowed to go in until he said I could. I was thinking, I hope you get a rash from his great leaf. He went back home to Florida within a month. Sue's friend Polly told me that Sue made him go home because she was afraid he might rape me. I told her, yeah, right. She knew it really happened. What a lie. Last I heard about Arnold, he was serving time at the slammer for another rape. So it just goes on and on and on, you know. And here's a discussion that happened that ended up changing my life, where I got out of the abusive relationship with my stepmom, kind of sort of not living with them after this thing right here. It had been a tough bout. I had just turned 18, about a week before. I was still in a 12th grade, though, okay? It's now considered an adult. I mainly focused on finishing high school and developing my religious beliefs. I could receive the checks for Dad's death on my own now. We had a pending lawsuit since Dad died at work. Dad had been dead several years when the case was almost settled. I was in my bedroom. I decided to go get something to drink. I was walking from the added on part of the house to the older section. I heard Sue and her two older kids discussing me. Something made me hide and listen. I knew there were three people in the discussion, Sue, Bart, and me. It went like this, although I cannot remember which one said what because it shocked me. Well, what would we do with her? We could put her in an institution. They would believe she was crazy. But what if they believe her stories? We would be in serious trouble. So what are we going to do? We got to get rid of her soon. Well, we could kill her and make it look like suicide. They will believe she committed suicide. When did we do this? This weekend. I did not know if they heard me walking in from the front of the house, and they said this to scare me, but I sincerely believed them. I had to find a way out. The bedroom door creaked, fathomed what I was hearing. My stepmom, Sue, and two of her children, Bart and May, were discussing ways of getting rid of me. They were talking about killing me and making it look like suicide. What did I do so wrong to get them to hate me so much? I mean, I was already their slave, their robot without my own thoughts and feelings. I did think about God often. They couldn't take that away from me. Uh-oh. Bart must have heard the door creak when I fell against it and replied, "Everyone quiet." I hear Darlene coming from her room. I drew in a deep breath as I silently prayed, "Lord, please let them think I did not hear them. Please keep me safe." Step back away quietly from the door, two steps back, and proceeded to walk normally down the hallway. I glanced at the three of them as I turned to the right to go into the kitchen utility room. They were sitting quietly as they watched me go into the kitchen. I knew I had to pretend I did not hear the conversation. I made it safe momentarily. They had no clue that I heard a conversation about killing me and making it look like suicide. I bent over to let out some air. I was dumbfounded. I realized I better stand up straight. If they came into the kitchen and me bent over like that, then the cat would be out of the bag. I decided I would start exercising. I breathed in a deep breath as I began doing toe touches. I take a right hand touching the left foot while the left hand is in the air and reverse in action. I did a set of 10. I was thirsty and remember why I first came into the kitchen before I was caught off guard. I was bent down to grab a drink. I noticed Sue as she came into the kitchen. She had her hands on her hips and asked, "Are you okay?" This is my thinking right here. I got this in parentheses. Okay. This puzzled me. Asking me if I was okay. Yet a few minutes prior, they spoke of eradicating me. However, I had to keep up the charade. Okay. So I stood up with the beverage and answered, "Yes, ma'am." She stated, "I heard you breathing hard, so I came to check on you." "Yes, ma'am, I just exercised," she stated. "But you weren't breathing like that when you went into the kitchen." "No, ma'am, I was exercising. I did toe touches in here." "Yes, did you hear a conversation a few minutes ago?" I hated to lie, but I had to save myself. "No, ma'am, were you all talking? I just saw y'all sitting there quietly." "Okay," she concluded. "Asked, was there anything I should have heard or should know, Mom?" They replied, "No, everything's fine." He turned and went back to the living room. I prayed silently again, asking God to guide and protect me. "Please lead me in the direction you want me to take." Jeffrey came to see me that afternoon. I confided in what I'd overheard. So then we decided that we're going to get married. So we skipped school that Friday, and we got married Friday night. So that's how that ended up. And we ended up moving with his mom and such and such and such. But years and years and years of stuff had happened, and he was abusive too. But I don't want to get into that as much as... And here's where me and my husband was in an apartment living in Huntsville, Alabama, and my stepbrother came over. I called it Bert's boisterous behavior. I was so tired a lot of the time, pregnancy can wear out of body. At times I was woken up from the banging on the front door. I worried something drastic happened. It was just Bart. He had to go use the men's room. My body was trembling from the banging on the door. Bart did this a few times. Frankly, I was petrified of him. He usually left after he did his bathroom deal. I did not think of any of the my memories. All I knew was the fear of him. And then I was attacked by a neighbor. I won't get into that. He raped me while his two-year-old son told his two-year-old son to get on his back while he was in the process of raping me. But we'll go back to where I ended up having to go to and that's where I was kicked when I was pregnant also. A neighbor kicked me in the belly. Okay, now this right here explains a little bit more on the realization, okay, when I first started realizing I had a problem. And of course, to understand myself, how traumatic my life had been, I always know it had been abused. I didn't realize the extent or the severity, but I always believed that as long as I had accepted it and not focused on the abuse, I would be okay. That idea was farther from the truth. The realization of the severity started after my second child was born. I had a tubal ligation. Both of my pregnancies had been difficult, usually cut faster than the first. This, however, was not the case for me. I frequently visited my OBGYN, Dr. Billy Waters. I previously needed medical care for two pregnancies, which resulted in miscarriages. One of the pregnancies, I went in saying, I'm pregnant and bleeding. I believe I'm having another miscarriage. He didn't think I was pregnant, but I was. Then find out a little bit later, I was pregnant again. His associate seen me, and he wanted me to do a DNC because I kept bleeding throughout the pregnancy. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to get my baby. And I went ahead and told Dr. Jefferson when he came back in the room. I said, he said, what did you decide? Repeated angrily. And I said, no, I am keeping my child. He said, okay, I'll give you a little bit longer to think about it. You need to go to the hospital. Let me do a DNC. Let me clean you out. Let me take the baby. I wasn't going to let him do it. And so my doctor ended up coming back from vacation and everything. Then later on, four years later, I had grown tired of bleeding every time I tried to sweep or if I bent over. So that's my son, second last child. I went for a second opinion on a hysterectomy. The second opinion doctor informed me my uterus had doubled in size. I went back to Dr. Waters. I said, the doctor said that my uterus had doubled in size. Dr. Waters stated, I could have told you that. I wondered why he hadn't informed me of that. I finally agreed to have the operation. After the hysterectomy, I was in the hospital for 5 days. Dr. Waters came to my room after I was alert enough after the surgery. He pulled up a chair and seated himself. And I said, you've been sexually abused? And I said, yes. It was a long time ago. I'm okay now. Dr. Waters further asked, have you ever had therapy for it? I told him, no, I haven't. I'm fine. If he said that I removed scar tissue from you for 2 hours. I had to stop when you started bleeding profusely. I've never seen anyone with this amount of internal damage. You had to have been sexually abused a lot. You didn't talk about it because of the magnitude of it. And he said, like, he waited 2 hours and everything. I had to wait on another doctor to come in there to do another surgery because he accidentally cut my ureter. Well, after he brought this up to me, it didn't take long for the nightmare to begin. Every time I started drifting off to sleep, I began to have flashes of the abuses that happened when I was a child. Anxiety set in. I was afraid to step out of the house for fear of being attacked. I was afraid to go to my mailbox. I was panicky when I had to go shopping. My anxiety affected me in many ways. I would watch each yellow line in the middle of the road as I drove, watching the dots and lines of the road cause severe stomach issues. And it turned my attention to something else. I focused on turn on the radio and listen to music. I enjoyed it. It helped me tremendously. Then it went on. everything I thought was spinning. I thought I was going to lose consciousness. I had to find a place to sit down briefly until weaknesses kept passing. I had passed. The feelings, memories, nightmares, and anxiety showed me that I needed to do as Dr. Billy Waters said. I came to the realization I needed help. So that's what, it took a lot of grueling therapy to get to the root of the sex abuse. When I had began therapy, I had known about prior stories of sex abuse. It took different therapists until Dr. Jack Kemp became my psychiatrist. He reminded me of Mario from Mario Brothers, the video games. I had already uncovered some of the shameful family secrets. I caught this because it had been hidden and taboo to speak about. Before beginning my therapy, I began to have a lot of flashbacks and nightmares. I was afraid to step out of the house. Every yellow line on the road made me sick and nervous. Billy Rollins had seen the damage inside my body and made me worry more. I was afraid to fall asleep because of nightmares. He said there had never been a woman as messed up and currently as he had seen me messed up. To make some sexual nightmares come to a halt, I had to have sex every few days, although sex hurt me. I thought at least I might be able to have a peaceful night's sleep without horrendous nightmares. Before becoming a patient of Dr. Jack Kemp, as seen another therapist, he would lock the door. He would have wet places on his private area, and Mr. Pincher was the elder at church help with paying him $25 to see me instead of unconventional therapy so he could do whatever he wanted to with me. And I ended up leaving him. One day when he put his hands on my breast, when he was supposedly doing a hypnosis type of thing. Then there was, before that was Lyle Duvall. There was a preacher for the church I attended. He agreed to see me for therapy since my insurance didn't take effect yet. Sometimes I show up nap on one of the benches since I had the trouble sleeping. And he ended up pushing me down on the desk, asking me where I wanted. So he was trying to rape me. He finally realized what he was doing and got off of me, and I ran to the car and I left. And then genealogy research, so a lot of this came out during the grueling therapy. I became interested in genealogical research. I found a few people in which I met so we could exchange information. One person was a state trooper. We met the genealogy floor of the library. Before I even sat down, he replied, "I remember you." I responded, "From where?" He said, "I remember doing you when you were a little kid. It still excites me." I did not want to sit down at the table with him, but I had no choice. My legs went out from underneath me with disbelief. I fell into the chair as I caught myself and fallen straight onto the floor. The state trooper stated, "My dad had over 300 child porno tapes, and you were in the majority of them." I asked, "How old was I? How old were you?" He responded, "You were 4, and I was about 9. He went on until you were, he said, "It went on until you were about 11 or 12. And they see, that makes sense with it being 11 or 12, because 11 or 12 is when I went and lived in the middle of Florida. I was flustered as I quit. I hope you disposed of the tapes now that your dad is dead and you are a state trooper." "No, Dad had a buddy with whom they watched the child pornos together. I gave them to him." "Please, did you get the tapes and destroy them?" "No, I gave them to him. They are his. The state trooper is now deceased and I know nothing of where these tapes are. But the state trooper told me it validated some flashbacks I had had about seeing these men coming at me at a young age, grabbing me in the dark and violating me. I could not believe whenever our insurance finally came into effect that a psychiatrist actually believed me. I did. I asked him why he believed me. He said because whenever I answered him, I would answer him back right away, no matter how horrific it was to hear. It still fit in, so he believed it. And I told him about what the other therapist had done about touching me, and he wanted me to prostitute. But I said my husband was not going to stand beside me. and said, Addie Coley, yes, unconventional therapy. So he got away with any kind of repercussions. One visit with Dr. J. Kemp, my world seemed to turn upside down. Y'all got to know about this. This is hurtful. All right. So we had a big trigger warning. I could not believe the flashes of memory. Devastated is not even close to what I was feeling. I was seeing Sue hold me down. Part of my body was in the living room while the upper part was in the dining room. She finally held my arms down while Bart raped me. It proceeded to another flash in which I was outside and Sue was building a huge bonfire. That was normal in the South, so I thought nothing of it until I saw the tires in and around the ready-to-light fire. I asked, why are tires in the fire? Why so many? Sue replied, so the fire would continue to burn. Innocently, I did not understand why she would want a fire burning straight for days. I was afraid something was going to catch fire. Such small embers might blow over with the wind and catch some of the 18-plus acres of blaze. Maybe someone kept a watch on it. I don't know. I have so many splotches of memory. Maybe I shouldn't remember it all. All of a sudden, I was exasperated. Everything just splitting through, yet hurling at me like rocks. I replied, I don't feel so good. May I lay down? Dr. Kent replied, if you feel like it. I felt faint. Dr. Jack Kent replied, small breaths. It's okay. Take your time. All of a sudden, I had a burst of energy with the disbelief of a memory. I jumped up and said, oh, no, this isn't right. Why? Why? I sobbed uncontrollably as I described to Dr. Jack Kent, and now you. My deepest nightmare, my greatest horror. I saw Mama Sue make me lie down on the floor. I was dead as Mama Sue said. I was her robot. I feared her. Sue had a white metal coat hanger on the end of a flash water. I was naked on the kitchen floor, and she was in between my legs. I did not remember giving birth, but I remember her handing me a baby boy as I was still lying on the floor. He and I bonded as he wept. His tiny fingers around my index finger. She bent down and took him from my loving arms. I thought, where are you going with my baby? What are you going to do with him? Of course, I said nothing out loud for fear of Sue's retaliation. I watched her backside as she walked away. I was so worried about my baby. What is she going to do with him? Mama Sue made it to the kitchen counter to the right of the sink. I heard a door open, which I knew contained silverware. I did not expect to see what I was seeing. Sue! Mama Sue has a knife! Her arm reached upwards in a stabbing position. I saw the blade glistening in the light of my... Oh, my God. Please help me. No. So I watched the knife lower down to the direction of my baby. Then another blackout. I do not know how I got my frail, weak child's body up or for how long it took me to get up, but I made it to the side door, which is by the carport. I watched Sue as she had a blue baby blanket and something all bundled up. Is she throwing my baby on the fire after she stabbed him? Why couldn't I protect my baby? I'm such a bad mom. Why didn't I remember this? I just want to die. Dr. Kemp gently asked, do you have proof? I said, no. Wait, I sort of do. I was so baffled. How could this happen? I said, Dr. Kemp, I remember when I was pregnant with my first son while married. The nurse said I had a baby before. What did you do with it? I thought. She was crazy when she asked me that. I thought I would remember if I had a baby before. She even called the police, who referred me to the that came to the health department to question me. I told the police I did not have a baby before because I didn't remember. I honestly could not remember. Jeffrey left work to come and get me away from this situation, as he didn't know about the baby either. Dr. Jack Kent replied, there's your proof. A doctor knows if a woman has had a baby before. I won't call the police since there's no birth certificate for him. However, you could go to jail if your stepmom denies it and put the blame on you. It would be a she said, she said. The baby won't get no justice. I will name him John Paul Clark after my deceased brother. Why did this happen? Why couldn't I protect my baby? It's all my fault. I want to die. I'm no good. I hate myself. Why? So when I remembered all this, I wrote it all down, and it still gets me today. It's like, why couldn't I remember? Even when the doctors asked me that, why couldn't I remember? I had blacked out. I could not believe it. And it still affects me today, remembering that. And that doctor protected me because he knew that the three of them could lie and say that I did it, and yet they did it. I was too weak to even get up on the floor. They didn't report it. They didn't do nothing. You know, they would have done it. If I would have done it, they would have reported me. And you know that they're responsible for doing it. She was the one that was into satanic worship. Laura May, one of the first times that I left Jeffrey, I went on to an abused woman's shelter. I still had the therapist I had when I was living with Jeffrey. She agreed with having a session with us concerning marital therapy. We discussed meeting halfway. The therapist smiled when Jeffrey said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to fix this. I replied, since Jeffrey has to work Monday through Friday and goes to work every Sunday, I think it would be best to meet on a Saturday. The therapist was dumbfounded when Jeffrey quit. I'd rather refuse him. She threw her hands up in the air. Jeffrey left to go back to work. We discussed how Jeffrey said that he would do anything to reconcile, but when I gave him an option, he shot it down. Darlene, I now see why you say this is a hopeless situation. I'm baffled by him saying he's willing to do what it took. You gave him different options, but he would rather go fishing. I can no longer help with marital therapy. I'm sitting here in disbelief. If he isn't willing to reconcile as he claims, he can't do it alone. He has to try to meet halfway. But we both know what he said. He'd rather be fishing. I did end up going back to him because I wanted to get both of my sons together and all that. One of the things I had written also on bad therapy versus good therapy. With therapy, there are ups and downs. I mean, take different therapy sessions that I had throughout the years. Sometimes some tests need to be taken. One of the tests is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, MMPI. Tests in general help to evaluate problems. My test results always came back strangely. When memories of trauma reared their ugly heads, I was devastated to say the least. I did not know how to deal with my traumatized sexual abuse, yet there was no way I was going to deny the trauma and fall mostly below my sanity. When memories of trauma are blanketed and hidden in my mind, I consider that below any emotional point because I do not know and understand the depths of the hidden devastation. I will try to explain this by thinking further. Point A, when the memories of trauma are surfacing, I try to cope with them. Point B, they bother me so horrendously that it's hard to function. I need professional help. Point C, I find a therapist to discuss them. Point D, I try to find out if the memories of trauma are a false memory or if they really happened. Point E, I accept that the memories of trauma happened. Point F, I sign no self-harm contracts. Point G, I try to understand the conflict between the past memories of trauma and my present psycho-emotional state. Point H, I try to come to terms with those memories of trauma, as horrible as they are, but it seems if I'm looking through dark shades, I do not see a light at the end of the tunnel. That's when I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel, people. I was suicidal a lot. I didn't know how to deal with the devastation of remembering about my son. That was really hard to get over. Back when I was a teenager, I enjoyed listening to gospel songs, and I wrote a song, and it's called A Child of God. One day I was walking the side of the road. I was a sinner I was. Until I repented and was baptized, I then was a child of God. There's something you need to have being a Christian. You need to have love for your sister and brother. Love is a good rule if you obey God's word. So there's another poem I wrote that kind of helps too when I think about nature, the is whenever I walked around my special place was nature. The beauty of the sky, the formation of the clouds drifting by, the stillness of the wind, all these things I drink in. The vast greenness of the new coming spring, the birds I hear, imagine and sing. This I do every spring. The foundation of this beauty here is everywhere, here and there. Yet people days and every phase of life have to's and not what to's. The beauty of a tree, you might hear the faint sound of a bee. Not to worry, shortly there, to help nature bear. I used to think that I need to know if all is okay. I was tired of this never-ending battle, never knowing which direction from here or there, scattered like seeds in the wind, shattered like a broken window pane. She shattered innocence. I think I'll end it after reading this, all about this, all right? Always a response of no. Let me go back up. I'm going to start that all over. Okay, tired of this never-ending battle. Never know which direction from here or there. Scattered like seeds in the wind. Shattered like a broken window pane. Never-ending bleeding, turning, yearning. Always a response of no. It's who is responsible for remorse. Oh, but of course, no remorse. I need to know that there's remorse. I need to know and feel understanding, sympathy, love, and acceptance. Okay, so I'll go over these little bits and explain it now. From how I felt back then to how I grew and I feel today. I need to know was written around 1998. I was still married and having horrendous. Before reading on, please take a moment to reread it and then try to understand the emotional concepts and the lyrics. I need to know if all is okay. Tired of this never-ending battle. Years ago when I wrote this, I did not feel all was okay because I did not want to struggle to get better. But the end of the tunnel was more darkness, more cruelty, more pain. I am happy now. I struggled and did not give up. By God's mercy and grace, I survived. There are some good times and some bad times. That is a part of life. It is well worth viewing it to a healthy healing standpoint than through the dark shades I previously used. If someone thinks to tell someone who is going through something negative, okay, hold on a minute, that scrolled up a little. Okay. Do not, for them not to say that, just be there for the person. Let them express themselves. Do not question and tell them what you would have done if you did not live their life. It was not you who learned it was not okay to have your own thoughts and ideas. Some who are listening are understanding what I'm saying. It is hard hearing others say they would have done this or that. They have no clue. It does not help the person deal with the memories of trauma. In fact, it's infuriating and belittling. It tells the survivor they could have done better. They could have done something different when, in fact, they did the best they could through the trauma. They survived. That's the number one thing, survival. Never know which direction from here or there. I never knew which direction to go for help. Only if you were skilled enough to truly help. The ones who were not skilled enough told me such atrocity as, you never were sexually abused. You wanted your dad to have sex with you, but it never happened. You lied about the past, etc. Well, all this stuff ticked me off. I had blocked for so many years. With its weird, its ugly head, I was devastated. I did not know how to deal with such traumatic sexual abuse, these memories of trauma. There was no way I was going to push these memories down and steal them as well as lie to myself for denying it. It was unnerving when I realized the truth, finding a therapist who listened and seemed to understand without judging is what I deem as a truly skilled therapist, thoughtful and compassionate. Like I said, if anybody wants to call in, they can. My thing is trying to get too big. it was went to like its 100% being on a page. Scattered like seeds in the wind, shattered like a broken window pane. I had so many mixed emotions at the time from being abused in the past and dealing with the present abuse I endured at the hands of my husband. I was incapable of seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Here and now was abused as well. It was a hurricane of maternal emotions I felt. I can be loved. I am worthy of being loved. I can't be loved. I'm not good enough to be loved. I'm not worthy of love. All of those feelings at the same time, what a conflict of emotions. It was all because I was not loved. My husband did not console me when I cried. Often the resounding words, shut up, always told to shut up, even as a child. I knew children were to be seen and not heard. I felt it was never ending. But it does end. I do not feel the daily pain of abuse, whether it be past or present, though. I do feel the pain often. Sometimes it's like a slap in the face. The old conflicts with the new. I am elated that the pain has dissipated tremendously. I used to feel I was all alone and no one cared. At times I feel the loneliness, but now I can see that others care. There are a lot of people who do not know me who care. It is human nature. Good people genuinely care. Shattered like a broken window pane, never-ending bleeding, turning, yearning, always a response of no. Just who is responsible for remorse? Oh, but of course, no remorse. At the time I wrote the above poem, I felt like I wanted the abusers to feel remorse for the pain they inflicted on me. In my healing, I accept the fact I do not need to feel their remorse. I feel bad for the perpetrators and pray that they get their hearts right with God. I left the bad, negative, abusive family and friends behind. I acknowledge that abusers in general deny they ever did any heinous acts towards the victim. They usually blame the victim, saying things such as, they're crazy, they like being hit, they make things up, they hurt me instead. If you try to get an apology, usually you will not acquire one. You may leave hurt and angry because they blame you instead of accepting their faults. Pray for them. I had to stop blaming myself. Boy, that was tough. I had accepted the blame for many years. I had always believed I deserved all the bad abuse that happened. I used to believe everyone was treated the way I was. I wondered why God would put all of us on this earth to just receive beatings, abuses, etc., for no love. I'm happy to know I was wrong. To know punishment is one thing, but cruelty and abuse are entirely different. Parents are to rear their children in the ways of the Lord. I learned things that happened to me because of man's free will. The next thing we'll go over is I need to know they feel remorse. I need to know and feel understanding, sympathy, love, and acceptance. So accepting all of this, I now feel understanding and empathy instead of sympathy, love, and acceptance. I do not need sympathy anymore. I need understanding just so others will help the abused and the downtrodden. Those bad people dealing with memories of trauma, learn to not judge by what you believe when you hear someone's story. I want to thank you all for listening and all. And I will go ahead. I think, you know, I told y'all earlier the Regina's Triumph is the one that got people interested and got me started with travel. With writing, since this is what people are wanting. So I'll read that, and then I will leave on one more poem after that. Regina's Triumph. I had to act like I was someone else, just a coach. I soon learned I could be myself, and it was okay. If someone didn't like me for me, it was their problem, not mine. There was a family that appeared to the outside world as poor. Soon to be arriving at the Duncan family was an unexpected and unwanted child, Regina Diane Duncan. She came prematurely with a father claiming that the mother had fallen. The truth was that they wanted to be rid of this child. It didn't take Regina long to realize not to cry when she needed anything. She learned to be silent. When Regina turned 2 years old, she saw a lot of hearts left on the table by one of her sisters. Regina knew that hearts meant to love, something that she needed since she came into this world. Regina aged, and every year on Valentine's Day, she saw the hearts and felt the need to be held. She felt the need to be told she was loved. She didn't desire to be told she was a good girl. Regina found 8 heart stickers. She decided to make wishes for them. With the first heart, she wished that her mother loved her. On the second heart, she wished that her father loved her. On the third heart, she wished that her brothers and sisters loved her. The fourth heart was a wish that anyone would love her. The fifth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hungry anymore. Her sixth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hit or yelled at anymore. She decided to save the other 2 hearts for later. Regina grew up and came upon the remaining hearts. One day she wondered, where did these come from? This seems childish to keep. As Regina tried to discard the remaining hearts, she felt a sense of reluctance. She couldn't understand it. It just seemed like bits of paper. Paper? Why can't I throw these away? Regina started having terrible dreams. There's a little girl named Gigi talking to her. The little girl reminded her of herself when she was little. The horrendous dreams came frequently. The dreams didn't make any sense to her, so she decided to go see a psychiatrist. He diagnosed her with DID, Dissociative Identity Disorder, PTSD, which is Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and depression. The psychiatrist gave Regina the name of a psychologist who specialized in these fields. She was a clinical psychologist. The psychologist gave Regina the titles of the books to read so Regina could understand her condition. Regina thought she had a happy childhood. She soon realized that wasn't true at all. When Regina was little, she was smart with a bright imagination. With the pain she felt, Regina couldn't take the pain alone. So out of Regina developed another person who helped her to cope. Regina knew nothing of this happening. These were difficult for Gigi. She couldn't handle it alone. She needed a bigger person who could do things that only big girls could do. So in came the help of Miss Love. 3 parts of Regina were Regina, the body of core, Gigi, who took a lot of the abuse, and Miss Love, who took on the difficult tasks that were expected of a big Regina. Regina only knew of herself, but she had to admit that she had blackouts and time lapses. The books made sense. People would call Regina other names. Regina would just smile at them and walk on by. Gigi and Miss Love told the therapist the story behind the hearts. The therapist had an idea. She told the different personalities to tell the hearts the stories, to share the pain, to get the feelings out, then throw the hearts away. These hearts don't bleed if you yell, scream, or cry. These hearts can take it. The therapist's idea worked, although it took time. The abuse didn't happen overnight, so the healing won't happen overnight either. Then the 3 personalities became 1 adequate loving person. Today, the new Regina always takes sticker hearts wherever she goes. She approaches people with friendly hello, asking them they might have one of her hearts. She tells them with a smile, this is to remind you that someone cares. Regina started using her past to help others who had been abused and traumatized. She wanted to get the word out that she could overcome the abuse, to never give up. They are true survivors. Do not see yourself as weak or no good. See yourself as a strong person you truly are. Okay, and I want to read the last part. There's stuff about the Untouchables, but we won't go there. Like I said, you can get my book at Amazon, Shattered Innocence, and it's got more of the writings there. There's that about little kids again. I got that in the back of the book again. But there is a poem I'm trying to get to. Tears for the Children Lost. I wrote this in January 2021. Tears for the Children Lost. Tears for the unprotected, sadness for innocence lost, joy for their beating hearts, joy for their breath of life, sorrow and mourning the loss of life, sorrow and mourning for the pain they felt, sad they died too young, tears, sorrow, empathy, and anger at the despicable people responsible. Know that you are not alone. Know that there are people that care for you. I want to thank y'all for being here. I am an advocate. I do not think badly as I used to. I now see through clear shades. I see a light, and there with the light at the end of the tunnel. So I want to inspire anybody to not lose hope. Please reach out to others who this is going through a difficult time. There are a lot of people who generally do care. Please don't lose faith. Don't lose hope. There are people who generally care about you. Thank you so much. I just thought I needed to share these little things with you all. I say God bless y'all.